Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Taking a look at prescription eyewear to begin the show today. How are your glasses fitting or working, or do you need some? Maybe need some new ones? Jim LaLuzerne here to help. Jim is from DePierre, Wisconsin. He has been president and CEO of five optics-related companies, past president of the National Optical Laboratories Association, and an inductee in the Optical Hall of Fame, and knows an awful lot about eyewear. And I'm really glad to have him back to be with us. Kind of one of our regulars. He comes by every so often to talk with us about eyewear. If you have a question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Jim LaLuzerne with us by phone today. Jim, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Hello, Larry. I'm glad to be here.
Well, really great. And with the snowy roads, I'm glad you're with us by phone instead of driving today.
Well, I appreciate that. It is awfully snow, a lot of snow outside and quite cold. So I'm tucked in by the fireplace here, ready to go.
Okay. Well, you know, my wife just started in a soccer league, and there are a lot of people, and is pretty active in basketball as well. I get out and do a lot of things, too. But as we look at some of those indoor sports during the holiday season, is there anything new in sports eyewear that we might talk about?
Well, Larry, I don't know if there's anything specifically new. There's always different frames. Different manufacturers are coming out with a little different twist on sports eyewear, something that they think might work a little bit better. Sports eyewear is usually quite specific to the sport. You mentioned basketball. In that case, you're trying to protect the eye from an elbow or a basketball itself that hitting the face. But if you have something like racquetball, you've got a very small projectile, which is going a lot faster. And can actually, some of the safety frames in the past used to have just a slit. They had no lens at all.
Yeah.
Sometimes the ball could actually get through that slit if it hit it, because it would compress down. So there's different safety glasses for different sports, and I think it's important for people to, when they get the glasses, to make sure it covers the sport that they have. And there's two parts of a safety glasses. One, whether the lens would break if it was hit with something, but the other part is that the lens actually stays in the frame, and that the frame itself provides some protection.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's a small, high-speed object. Other times it could be something large like a basketball, and you want to get, larger protection from that. So my advice is to make sure that the one that you get is specific to the sport that you're playing. And also, most people should know that the great majority of prescription lenses or prescription eyeglasses can be put into sports frames. So there's some that you might buy at a sporting goods store, which are for non-prescription, and people wear those. They might wear contact lenses with them for their prescription, or they might not need a prescription. And then in other cases, if you need a prescription, your eye doctor dispenser can help you with that. They have access to a wide variety of different types of sports eyewear.
Yeah. Thinking back here a little bit and thinking about contacts, you mentioned contacts. It's been, I can remember watching games where the game stopped and everybody was down on their hands and knees on the floor looking for contacts. You don't see that as much anymore. I don't know if there's any, if it's the fact that people are wearing something non-prescription over their contacts, or the contacts are stickier, or what's going on.
Well, my guess is that it's the difference between hard contact lenses and soft contact lenses.
Oh.
The original, they call them rigid gas permeable now, but the original ones were quite a bit smaller, and being rigid, they were able to be blinked out. The soft contact lenses are much bigger, and the edges fit underneath the eyelid. In most cases, there's some exceptions, but most of the time, the edges fit under the lens's larger surface, and it's a tighter adherence to the eye. So it's very unlikely that a contact lens would be knocked out in the physical contact. You have to kind of go in and pull them out to get them out.
And that's why we don't see that anymore. Okay.
Yep. That's well, my guess, yeah.
Well, some people, let's turn to transition lenses for a minute. And before I do that, let me remind you, if you'd like to join in, have a question about your eyewear, join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. But let's talk a little bit about transition lenses. And I have to admit, my latest transition lenses that I've gotten are not perfect. I'm a little disappointed in mine, and I've had a little bit of trouble at various distances reading. So I'm not totally happy, and I guess I should be going back to the optometrist to have another look. But have the techniques of transition lenses changed much?
Well, Larry, it might be a terminology thing here. Transitions is a brand name for lenses that change when they go in the light. And what you're saying with the reading problem, I think that's a progressive lens.
That's progressive. You're absolutely right. So that's my question, relates to progressive lenses, isn't it? And we can go, but let's go back to transition after that.
Okay. Well, a progressive lens, for people that don't know, traditionally, since way back in Ben Franklin's time, we had bifocals in the upper.
Right.
Usually the upper two-thirds of the lens was for the distance and the bottom third was for reading, and you picked one or the other depending on what you wanted. That left a big area that was kind of the intermediate that wasn't, you know, sometimes the upper part was not good for that intermediate and the bottom part wasn't either, so there's a part you couldn't see. Progressive lenses were developed over 50 years ago, and what they have is a variation of curves on the front that change in power so that you gradually go from your distance through intermediate into reading. And there's literally a couple hundred different manufacturers of progressive lenses today, and some very, very good and some not so good. So that's one issue that you can have. The other thing that can happen, Larry, is how they are fit to the patient wearing them. The height or where the progression starts is very important, so that has to be, you have to take the frame you're actually going to wear and see where you look through that lens carefully and measure that. The distance between your eyes is very critical. Most people's eyes converge when they read about 5 millimeters. Some people don't, so that presents other problems. So you have to begin with a high-quality product to begin with, and then it has to be fit properly. And I guess lastly, it has to be made properly.
Yeah.
So there are problems with that. And when I used to be involved with this service levels on this quite a bit, and when we surveyed people that had them, there was somewhere greater than 90% of the people that wore progressives loved them. They said it's the best lens they ever had. I mean, of course, everybody would prefer eyes that didn't need glasses
sure.
at all. But considering the fact, compared to bifocals, compared to trifocals, compared to two pairs of glasses, over 90% of the people really liked the progressive. There's about 10% of the people that, for a variety of reasons, I've mentioned a couple times that sometimes people with a specific occupational need, bifocals still present the best solution. Sometimes people have two pair of glasses, one for general purpose and one for that. So my advice to you or anybody, Larry, that gets progressive lenses and is not really happy, go back to where you got them, explain the problem. Sometimes it can be fixed by adjusting the fitting height or adjusting the frame. A frame has to be fit very precisely to your frame face, and the frame has to be, you can't let it slide down your nose, and you can't have it crooked on your face. You've got to keep it up there where it belongs, because it makes a big difference in especially a progressive lens and how it works. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, as we were talking and you mentioned bifocals, I was thinking back to, I think, one of the funniest sequences, and just earlier Kathleen was talking about comedy on her show, Bill Cosby talking, doing a little skit on the first time he had to get bifocals.
I remember that.
Oh my goodness, that was really, really funny.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I had my terminology goofed up a little bit, and I mentioned transition when I meant progressive. So I'm glad you answered the progressive question. But what about transition lenses? Now that's different, and some people say they've been disappointed with them.
Well, let me give you the nutshell on that. Transitions have been around, I think, as a brand name, probably 20, 25 years. Prior to that, they were photogray lenses that were made just in glass. And transitions are a brand name. They're made in plastic, and they get darker when you go out in the sun, and they lighten up when you come indoors. The early products were rather poor performing. They didn't get dark very fast, they didn't get very dark, and they didn't clear up very much indoors. They've gone through seven generations since the original one over that 20-plus years, and they are almost completely clear indoors. They get remarkably dark when you go out in the sun, and there's a lot of people that absolutely love them and the performance of them. The one underlying problem that people have with them is that they do not activate except in sunlight. And if you go into a car and you've got bright light coming through the windshield absorbs the ultraviolet light. And the ultraviolet light is what activates the lens.
Oh.
So you get some activation in a car. It's better than not, but you don't get the full activation. And so this product that works wonderful and gets really clear indoors and clears up fast and does all that. The one area where a lot of people need it is in a car, and it just doesn't work very well there. Some protection. I have a pair, and I'm not too bothered by sun when I'm driving a car, so I'm real happy in a car with them. But there's other people that don't and aren't happy with it. And the only solution that I can offer for that or there's a variety of solutions. One, you can get a pair of regular sunglasses to wear for those times when you need that, and then wear the progress or the I'm doing it now. the transitions for other times. They also make coverall sunglasses that can fit over the top of any pair of glasses that you have. You've probably seen them there.
Yeah.
They provide that. And those are a pretty good solution in a car, because in a car, you know, if you're walking around and driving around, walking and bouncing, those are kind of heavy and kind of bang on your face. If you wear them in a car, it's kind of a quiet environment, and they settle in and they work pretty good. So I know a number of people that keep a pair. They're relatively inexpensive for these coverall glasses. They just keep them in the car, and if they're bothered by sunlight, they just pop them on over the top of their prescription glasses.
Yeah, I have some clip-ons. I just call them clip-ons.
Sure, they have clip-ons, too. That's another product, but that's a good suggestion, Larry. Yes.
Now, the clip-ons are good for me because, the car issue, and also the clip-on that I have for fishing, the lens itself cuts the glare in the water so that you can see down in the water better, and I'm not sure that that's...
That's a polarized.
Yeah, polarized.
Most likely it's a polarized, and those are wonderful. As you know, that really makes a difference, fishing, seeing in the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim LaLuzerne, our guest today, who has 45 years in the optics industry, talking with him today about prescription eyewear. If you'd like to join in, maybe you've got a question about your contacts or about your prescription glasses. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking prescription eyewear with Jim LaLuzerne. Questions for Jim, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Jim, what's your opinion in terms of the best lenses? What are the best lenses made of?
Well, the good news is today we have lots of options in lens material. We used to be stuck with glass, which was literally twice as heavy as even the heaviest plastic lens material today. And there was an era when eyeglass frames were quite big and lenses were big, and that was really a major issue. Today, there's literally dozens of different types of materials. The what I would call the everyday lens material is polycarbonate. The good news is polycarbonate has a high index, so they can make a thinner lens. It's a quite light material,
yeah,
and it's virtually unbreakable for practical standpoint. So it's used in safety glasses and children's eyewear. And now there's other materials that have even a higher index for people that have an extreme of prescription. And you can get those with that. Then there's conventional plastic lenses that are a little less expensive and that do a fine job in most cases. All of the plastic lens materials are UV absorbing, so that they do a very good job of absorbing the ultraviolet light. That's another good thing about polycarbonate, that virtually, without any special treatment, absorbs virtually all of the ultraviolet light. So that's kind of a general overview. I myself wear polycarbonates because I like the impact resistance, and the optics are great. Sometimes with an extreme prescription, some people that wear polycarbonate get something called the chromatic aberration. It's kind of a complicated thing, but they get, and the edges, if they look through the edges of the lens, if they have a high prescription, they get a little color distortion on the edge. And that can be solved with some of these other materials. Doesn't happen very often. It's usually not very noticeable or bothersome, but it can happen. I know that we've had a question on this show in the past where somebody experienced it, and we talked about it. So that's, you know, there are cases when a doctor or a dispenser might suggest another product.
How are these lenses actually made? I mean, is there a machine that sort of, I'm just...
Yeah, well, the history of it is quite interesting. It goes way back for hundreds of years with grinding glass lenses, but today the plastic lenses, most of the time the front surface is molded. So the manufacturer takes a mold, very high precision mold, and there's literally hundreds if not thousands of different possible curves they can begin with on the front. They make a precision mold, polish it extremely high, and then in some cases it's a liquid that's put into it which hardens like an epoxy. There's other ones that are heated and injected, and when they cool, they follow that curve. That blank then is given to an optical laboratory who in turn grinds the inside curves on that using grinding equipment, diamond-coated lathing equipment to grind that surface on the inside, and then it has to be what they call fine, which is smooth but not a complete polish. And then they polish it with a polishing compound. It's really quite intriguing, at least to me, that this is complicated and as detailed as this is, how mass-produced it is. One of the companies that I worked for at one time made about 45,000 pairs of eyeglasses. This is a national company. But they made 45,000 pairs of eyeglasses a day. Every single one of them was custom made, and no two alike. And the average time within the lab, you know, to actually make the lens was just a little bit over a day. So that's pretty good. Pretty amazing. Yeah, one of the other things that has really blossomed in the last few years is anti-reflection coatings. And anti-reflection coatings really improve the vision of the person wearing the glasses, and they also make the lenses clearer so somebody else looking at that person doesn't see a bunch of reflections on their eyes. And anti-reflection coating is a rather complicated process. It involves a vacuum chamber, and and metallic ion deposition on the lens. It's kind of a long, complicated thing, but basically a regular lens that has two surfaces reflects 8% of the light that hits it, 4% on the front, 4% on the inside. And this process reduces those reflections down to less than one-half of 1%.
It's amazing.
And especially for people at low light, evening time, when you need all the light you can get, that's a big deal. And some elderly people that have, you know, night vision problems, that helps them a great deal as well. So AR coating is something that for many years was a technical difficulty, is pretty mainstream today throughout the world. In Europe, I don't know, I think it's in excess of 80 or 90% of all glasses are getting AR coating in most of Europe. The U.S. is, I think, 30 or 40%.
Man. Where are most of them produced?
Well,
are they produced here in the U.S. or are they?
Oh, yes. Almost all of the eyeglasses that you buy in the U.S. are made in the U.S. The actual lens blanks themselves that they start off with might be made in other countries. Those are made all over the world, but the actual laboratories are in the U.S. And there's probably 400 or 500 optical laboratories in the United States. I know there's a lot of really small ones that are associated with maybe a retail outlet, but I'd say 400 or 500 optical laboratories that are in the business of providing glasses to people other than themselves. And a very competitive industry. There's two or three giants in there. Some of that 400 or 500, there's one organization that has, I think, 150 of those labs that they own and run. There's another one that has maybe 40 or 50 of those labs that they own and run. But there's still probably half of all of those labs are totally independent, local businessmen. It's many millions of dollars to get the equipment and get set up. It's a big deal, but it's a rather interesting industry.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, we had an email from Joe in Franklin, Wisconsin. He umpires baseball, and on cool evenings, his glasses fog up. Is there a good anti-fogging product available?
Interesting. The answer is maybe. There depends on the kind of lens material that he has in the lens of his glasses, but typically what I see is that it's caused because not only is he hot and humid himself, but the air is not flowing behind the lens very well. It's probably trapped in the nature of the frame on his face or whatever. They do make anti-fog compounds. They're available in a lot of drugstores and doctor's office dispenser. And they're rubbed on the lens surface, and that actually makes kind of a wet surface. So the first moisture that comes in actually makes a little wet layer that's clear and rather than being foggy looking.
Yeah.
The negative or the difficulty with that is that most of those do not work well with people that have an anti-reflection coating because it interferes with the anti-reflection coating.
Oh.
It might not work for his particular glasses if he had an AR coating on them. It wouldn't hurt to try, and he could ask his doctor about that, but that would be one possible solution for that. Otherwise, other than one of those, and these are temporary coatings.
Yeah.
You put them on, you wipe them around, you clean them off, and it lasts for a few hours. And the next time you wash it, you probably wash it off. But they are effective in many cases. I used to have, when I was skiing, you know, downhill skiing.
Yeah.
I used to use them on my glasses at the time, and they worked quite well.
We have another email. By the way, you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@WPR.org. Mike has trouble with his shooting because he can't see the front sight of his weapon. and he came across an ad that claims to solve that problem. Do they have two different lenses in the same frame somehow?
You're trying to see the object.
He's trying to see the front sight, so I would assume he let's say he's right-handed, he would close his left eye and look down the barrel of the gun with his right eye, and he's having trouble seeing the front sight, which would be the sight near the end of the barrel.
Right, and he's looking at whatever he's shooting at with his distance glasses or whatever. Boy, I'm not familiar with that product that does that, and I'm not. I'm at a loss to think optically how they could do that.
Yeah.
They could make a split type of a bifocal lens that had the distance, but that thing, in my mind, sounds like it would interfere with looking at your distance vision. So,
yeah.
I can't quite visualize how they might be doing that. And still be able to see in the distance. When you're shooting, the thing in the distance is sitting right on top of the front sight. So you've got two objects, one 2 feet away from your face and one 200 yards away, and I just don't know how that would work.
Bobby in Barnum, Minnesota has a question for you. Let's go there. Bobby, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. The question is, I have to have a different pair of glasses to wear every day and then one separate pair of glasses for symphony so that I can see the music, even though the director and audience and all is really blurred. Is there a way to have one contact that's farsighted and one contact that's nearsighted to get your brain to somehow be able to not have to keep changing glasses?
The answer is yes. It doesn't work for everybody, but it is successful for some. And I have heard it being used for exactly what you're trying to do. Your mind, probably for this purpose, because reading is, in this case, more critical, they'll probably take your dominant eye and put that so it's focused at the distance for the sheet music, and then your non-dominant eye for the distance, so you can still, you wouldn't have great vision in the distance. Still be able to do that, and so that's one solution. Another possibility is to get a pair of glasses that has a very small distance correction on the top, and in a normal pair of bifocals, for example, the upper two-thirds is for distance, basically, and the bottom one-third is for reading.
Uh-huh.
You can flip that around and make the bottom two-thirds for reading and the upper third for distance. And when I say reading, because your sheet music is probably a little farther away than a normal reading distance,
right.
I'm guessing 24 inches or so. Is that about right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You would need to tell your dispenser or your doctor that you need this for the lower part to be set for a distance of 24 or 28 inches or whatever it is that you would like it, and then the upper part would be set for distance. So you would be able to look in the lower two-thirds to see your sheet music and then still be able to tip your head down a little bit, look over the top to see off in the distance.
Okay, so then I would only need the one pair of glasses then, it sounds like, right?
You need the one pair of glasses for that, right. And otherwise, do you have contacts now?
No, I don't. I have an astigmatism, and I don't know that was my other question.
Okay, well, there are contact lenses for astigmatism, and in many people, they can do a very good job. The more you have, the more difficult it is, but generally speaking, it would work pretty good. The glasses might be a good solution if you wanted to get contacts for other purposes. You could actually get three contacts, one for distance for one eye, one for distance for the other eye, and then when you had this particular application, you could just use the one for near vision in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
Hope that helps.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bobby, for calling. Appreciate it. Gary in Wauwatosa, we go to you next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I'm calling from the viewpoint of a welder.
Okay.
And when I turned 40, I needed to get reading glasses. And by the time I was, retired at 56, I had three pairs of safety glasses, one with the distance in the bifocal for walking around and reading blueprints and things. And the other pair was same prescription I used for sitting in front of the computer, where the focus was at about arm's length.
Okay.
And then there was another pair that was for reaching even further because of my job. And this is something that I think manufacturers are missing the ball because they're not supplying their employees with the right vision wear for doing the job. And if you can't see what you're trying to focus on, you can't do a good job. And also, there's no safety glasses that fit on well on if you're wearing a respirator, whether it's like the 3M, like what a doctor would wear,
yeah,
or something more that's with the cartridges and stuff. And so there's a whole, you look in catalogs, supply company catalogs, and there's nothing. But that's my point. You know, people can't be wearing at work glasses from Walgreens that cost $10 because their employer only offers them one pair of safety glasses a year. They need to do better on this, and because their work is suffering and it's costing them money for repairs and things. I know this as a welder, so that's why I called.
All right.
Well, I want to completely agree with you. I used to go and encourage companies to do exactly what the caller had said, was to look at specific visual needs that people have, that, and sometimes it does take multiple pair of glasses to do it, especially in an occupational environment. But most of the companies that I used to deal with were quite enlightened in that area and did a pretty good job of that. Now, one specific thing that that he mentioned was the fact that it's hard to get prescription eyeglasses with a respirator, full face respirator or whatever. They do make a pair of glasses specifically for that, and instead of having temples on it, you know, the little sticks on the side
right,
behind the ears, it has a rubber headband with a very, very thin piece of rubber that fits tight to the side of the face, so that the face mask can work along with that. And you would need to look for that. But I know that they make that, and it's basically the front of a pair of safety glasses, and then it's held onto the face with a rubber band that's maybe a half inch wide but very, very thin, so that it makes a good, you can put a mask on and seal it. But his other point about getting specific glasses for specific needs and welding and things like that, I am a very strong supporter of that, and I encourage any employer to think about that because his points are very valid.
Very valid. Thank you, Gary. Julia in Mondovi. Well, let's turn to you now. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show. I'm wondering, I too had a question. I wear bifocals, but I had a question about getting contacts. I have one eye that's low vision, and it doesn't actually look straight ahead. It looks off to the right. So when I wear glasses, I'm basically looking, seeing with one eye. But I had an accident a couple weeks ago where I scratched my cornea, and I think it was more due to, because wearing the bifocal glasses, I just kind of bumped into a branch because, you know, sometimes it's hard to see with the bifocals on the sides and whatnot. So I had wore contacts many, many years ago, you know, like 30-some years ago. But I'm just wondering, does the cornea, it was a small cut in my cornea, and I did use antibiotic for it. Does that generally heal back to what it was or not? And I'm just wondering, would it be better, would it be okay after a cornea scratch once it's healed to wear or to get the contacts for somebody that's like bifocals?
Yeah. Okay.
To somebody that's had, according to my eye doctor, two of the worst cornea scratches he's ever seen.
Oh man!
I seem to walk into sticks all the time. But anyway, I had an extremely severe cornea scratch, and I did go to the doctor immediately, and he did give an antibiotic to keep any issue there, and it did take. The body heals very quickly to make a protective coating and be okay, but the full at least in my case, the full healing of it was over a month before it didn't distort my vision a little bit anymore.
Oh.
So there is there's like a quick healing process and then kind of a long-term healing process.
Yeah.
And it's similar, I guess, to cuts and scratches on your body and other places, too. I hope you've gone to a doctor if it's severe enough for you to put an antibiotic in it and have them look at it. But I would be optimistic that it is going to heal well. Again, you need to have somebody look at it and tell you that, but I'd be optimistic for that. Once it healed from that, if you wanted to get a contact lens, the corneal scratch should not be a problem with that after the healing process. But if you have bifocals and you only have one eye, you may not be real happy with the contact lens solution for bifocals. There's a limited number of people that are successful with that. If one thing you said that you had a bifocal, I've encouraged most people to at least try a progressive lens that works very, very well with monovision if the other eye isn't working right. And many people have very good success with that.
Yeah, I do have the progressive.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Suzanne emailed and wonders if she can get inexpensive sunglasses that offer good protection, or does she have to spend a lot of money?
Well, if she's talking about non-prescription sunglasses, I think the answer is you don't have to spend a lot of money. From a safety standpoint, they all have to meet the standards for impact resistance, and they and almost all, except maybe some oddball ones you might find at a special in a garage sale or something, meet the ultraviolet protection as well. So if you find something that you like and it fits, and I wouldn't be too concerned about that. Most of the real inexpensive ones scratch easily because they don't have a good coating on them.
Yeah.
So you might have to replace them more often or else be a lot more careful. But I'm not going to tell you not to do it.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you what, this has been a real pleasure as always, Jim. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. You'll come back and be with us again. Lots of calls we didn't get to here today.
I would be happy to, Larry.
All right. Thank you very much. Jim LaLuzerne of De Pere, Wisconsin, spent 45 years in the optics industry, and he's past president of the National Optical Laboratories Association and an inductee in the Optical Hall of Fame, and it's always great to have him come by. And I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's pretty much always the way it works on this program. Coming up, we're going to take a look at food, and we're going to zero in a little bit on pizza. Where's the best pizza in Wisconsin? Mary Bergen has some ideas about that, and she's going to be telling us about those ideas. And, of course, we're going to be getting your input as well next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.